Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
This show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org. You are listening and hopefully getting engaged in the only constitutional solution anywhere that is being aired on TV, radio, any medium. This is it, because we actually have, or I actually have, the constitutional process and solution that will actually put the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution once again. And if you want to get engaged in the conversation, the number to call in is 215-867-8255. With that, let me jump to the next little bit. And most people know we've got a lot of new listeners as we've been growing, and I expect this show to continue to grow. This is the and forgive me, I'm not trying to self-aggrandize here, and I'm not trying to elevate myself. What I have discovered is the works of Madison and Jefferson, and I am just literally putting the microscope on their work. And therefore, this isn't about me, but this is the only show, and this is the only dialogue you can engage in that will really save the Constitution. There are lots of people that have their, you know, their assertions, front benchers, side benchers, back, I don't care what you call me. I, you know, as long as you can call me late for dinner, at least that's what my grandpa used to say. Anyway, this show is dedicated in supporting state legislators who are willing to commit to protecting their citizens from federal tyranny. In addition, this show is also dedicated to county grassroots leaders, such as the Central Committees for the GOP, so forth and so on, so that they can take control of their employment. In other words, those employees of theirs that are wearing their label in public office. That way, they can make sure that they are committing to the Constitution and fulfilling their oath of office. I am tired of seeing so many. I live in a county that I'm disgusted with because they don't care about holding their elected officials. And I live in a state that doesn't care about holding their elected officials to that oath of office, that they will protect and defend the Constitution or support the Constitution. I don't care what it is. They have to at least support the Constitution. And accepting money from federal programs, to me, is a violation of their oath of office because those are unconstitutional funded programs. With that, with those who are willing to commit and stand up to the federal tyranny, then I'll basically say, folks, that they're not only committing to saving their citizens, they're saving all citizens, because anybody that stands in front of that monster, the Goliath, the bus, whatever you want to call it, anybody that's willing to do that is doing that for all of us, because literally it takes one person. Rosa Parks, like somebody mentioned, Rosa Parks sat in the front of the bus, and she did that so that all people could have equal access, equal opportunity, and so forth. And she was just basically pointing out the systemic racism that was in our system that was injected by the Supreme Court unconstitutionally and basically just bred from there out of, and as you, if you know the history of this, this literally came out of the Democratic Party. The Democrats wanted to put a gag rule in the Senate on slavery. That was Martin Van Buren. And they wanted to make sure that slavery became a moot issue. I was telling somebody the other day that the Missouri Compromise was an unconstitutional compromise, period. There was no dictating that when a state joined the Union, they had to be slave or they had to be free. It was literally and always supposed to be at the desires of the state. And as a matter of fact, the Northwest Ordinance basically kept all slavery to the existing states, and all new states couldn't come into the Union. And the Northwest Ordinance was one of those ordinances that was passed in 1787. And then when the new Congress met in 1789, they re-ratified it because they wanted to make sure that they were promoting the growth of a good moral society, because if you didn't know, it also promotes the use of the Bible for teaching and so forth. But anyway, I've got a big constitutional issue I want to talk to you, and you're more than welcome. The phone lines again are open. I'll repeat them. 215-867-8255. Something kind of propped up out of the constitutional field today. It had something to do with Illinois, and if you want to call in and talk about it, because I'm going to bring it up, and if nobody wants to call in, that's fine. I'm not going to intimidate you. I don't beat people up. I don't like hosts that do that. I'm asking you to be civil. You know, I have my 3C rule, right? If you know me, keep it confidential. I go by GR. Just call me GR. And I also ask that you be civil, and I will be civil as well, and be concise. I try to be concise. I know I go down a lot of tangents, so forgive me. That being said, if you want to call, just be civil, and I'll be civil, and we'll be okay. I did scan the news, and as I always say, there is no sign that the federal government is disbanding any of its constitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers. This is really important. I have to point this out every day, because over 80% of what they're doing, over 80% of what they're spending their money on, and these are not idle chit-chat words I'm saying here, this is unconstitutional spending and unconstitutional government. Therefore, it is tyranny. And it is a financial tyranny that is designed to ruin this republic. So I want you to know that we have to continue to engage. We have to push forward. We have to do this because the federal government won't do it. There is no monster that is just going to lop off its arms because it realizes, oh, these arms do bad things. I think there's a Bible verse that you're supposed to take out your eyes if they offend thee. But monsters don't do that. Monsters don't care if they offend themselves or others. That's just because they're monsters. I have that standing question, and this is not what I wanted to talk about, but I do want, if you happen to find this in the Constitution, what or where in the Constitution gives the federal government the authority to create and manage land for the purpose of reservations, whether that's for trees, animals, people, it doesn't matter. Show me in the Constitution where they have the ability to take state land and own it, control it, and manage it for the purpose of a reservation. Like to see that. I also want to point out that there is a Red Pill Expo. It looks like I probably will be going. I was asked to go in for an interview with the Patriot Soapbox YouTube channel. And as a matter of fact, I think I've told you about them. They're going to start providing me with a little 5-minute news clip that I'm going to work into the show. That way you can kind of catch up with what they are covering, because what they are covering is not what you're getting in the news cycles. And so like the QAnon and other issues that nobody's even talked about. I mean, Fox News doesn't talk about it. But anyway, so they will be there. And so you may want to check them out. And you may want to actually check out the Red Pill Expo at redpillexpo.org. Take a look. They have the prices there. I actually looked at the prices. Actually, some of them aren't that bad. I know it's a little steep, but if you look at what you're getting exposed to and so forth, that's actually a very, very good price. I mean, it included with that is food and so forth. You can't get a 3-day concert and pay that kind of money, because it would just cost you a lot more, especially, you know, indoors. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, rent out a field dirt cheap and then make you camp out there and stuff, but the quality of life isn't so good. But anywho, check it out, and hopefully you will find time to make that your one excursion for this summer. So here it is. What I want to do, and I don't know how many of you have heard, but it looks like Illinois just ratified a very bad amendment. And so that amendment happens to be the Equal Rights Amendment. And as a matter of fact, let me pull it up here because it's nice to have some facts in front of you. The Equal Rights Amendment was submitted March 22nd for ratification in 1972. And it went forward and it expired in June 30th, 1982. So in other words, there are two ways you can do an amendment. You can do an amendment to the Constitution in granting Certain powers are allowing the states to delegate powers to the federal government via the Constitution in this amendment. And there's two ways you can do this. You can actually put a period of time where the amendment, you know, ratification process will expire. There are other amendments where you leave it wide open, where there's no expiration, and it can go back and forth. And so one amendment that was wide open was the 17th Amendment. And so the 17th Amendment allowed states to ratify. And you've heard me talk about this. On the 17th Amendment, it was, I believe, Maryland or Delaware in 2012, they actually ratified the amendment as well. But the interesting thing is they actually rejected it. And so they were allowed to switch their rejection to ratification. Now, there's a lot of states out there that have, you know, been fed up with the 17th Amendment and have passed measures and so forth in their legislators. And here's the thing. Why don't those states then just basically pull up that amendment again and reject it or rescind their ratification, just like Maryland or Delaware, I think it was, that did it in 2012? If they open the door for one switch to go one way, then the door has to open in both directions. So there's plenty of states out there that would love to get rid of it, and all they've got to do is just rescind it. Well, so here's an amendment for the Equal Rights Amendment that is basically closed. It is not open anymore, and it was rejected, and the progressives are trying to resurrect this. But I'm out of time to talk about it. But if you want to call in and talk about it, if you think this is a good amendment, let's talk. And I will be right back after a break from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Did you know your overall health is connected to your dental health? As you get older, this becomes more and more important. If you're like me, going to the dentist can be terrifying. So for me to maintain my dental and overall health, I need a great dentist and staff who are sensitive to my fear, pain, and even my fear of the cost of dental work. This is why it took me almost 2 years to find a great dentist after moving into this area. Bottom line, I need a great dentist just to get into the chair, even for a regular cleaning. This is why I personally recommend Dr. Vaughn Tracy as not only a great dentist, but a great patriot and a dentist who cares about your comfort and health. You can find him at VaughnTracyDDS.com. That's VaughnTracyDDS.com. Then you can agree with me, it's great to have a great dentist. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
And as I was saying going into the break, that you'll find that progressives love to obfuscate the facts. They love to kind of distort things. And so what's happening is you'll find that even though this amendment has expired, Illinois is, let me see, they're not very red, are they? Illinois happens to be that state legislator, or I should say body, that bicameral legislative body in Illinois happens to be pretty progressive. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why Illinois needs a champion in splitting that state. Indiana needs a champion in splitting that state. I believe every state that has a population center that is dictating the policies and they're not listening in a Republican form of government and giving representation to all of the counties in those states. In other words, the counties don't have a seat in the Senate and they apportion everything by population, which means that they are a democratic form of government giving everybody one voice. Equal voice instead of representation to the disparate interest of the disparate parts of the republic in a state. And therefore, these states need to be split up so that the new states can stand up and go, you know what, we're going to abide by the Constitution. We're tired of these people not abiding by the Constitution. And so I'd love to see Illinois get split up. I'd love to see Indiana, Michigan, and probably even Wisconsin, so forth and so on. If you do that, then people will start getting the message, well, I guess this Republicanism stuff is pretty important. And especially some of these states that have been passing this Electoral College distortion, because the Electoral College is what they're trying to do in getting the Electoral, and I know I'm on a tangent going down a rat hole, but forgive me. This Electoral College that this idiot on Facebook and other YouTube video presentations, that we're just going to give the vote to whoever wins the popular vote. The Electoral College is a representation of legislative districts. In other words, if your state has given up all of your legislate or all of your Electoral College votes to the popular vote, then what they have done is they've taken away your voice. And as far as I'm concerned, every state that does that should no longer allow individual democracy to, because it just becomes mob rule. And so what they've done is they've literally marginalized representation for the different parts of that state. And that just, it helps reinforce the need for people in those states to stand up to this tyranny, this unconstitutional forms of government, and demand that they get their voice back. And the best way to do that, there's two ways. You apply to split the state. And if they refuse to split the state, then what you do is you get your county commissioners to demand a constitutional convention to reel in all this unconstitutional government and to force republicanism again. And if the state legislators still silence you, that's when you go to Congress and say they're violating the Constitution by failing to follow Article 4, Section 4, the Guarantee Clause. Because the United States Constitution states that it guarantees every state to be Republican in form, and which means not to be Democratic. And American Republicanism was based on two constituents. I've gone through this several times, and they even talk about the states being a constituent as well as the people. That's why the Senate exists, and that's why the representatives, the House of Representatives. The representatives represents the people of each state, and the Senate represents the states themselves. And in the bicameral legislative bodies of each state, the representatives represent the people of the county, and that's even being lost because there's too many states that have 4, 5, 10 counties that only have their one representative. How does one representative represent the disparate interest of literally a mountain zone, a desert zone, and a timber zone or an agricultural zone? They can't. They can't do it. They have to constantly compromise for the best of whomever it is, the greater population or who they have to cater to. And that's how it gets complete. Representation gets completely lost when you allow apportionment by population to smear the lines. There is a reason why counties are the seats of government, because states are Republican in form as well. And they're supposed to be Republican in form. That's why you have a distributive system. Anyway, as I go on, I'm just going to rant more, and I could just go all day about this, but let me go into the Equal Rights Amendment. So the Equal Rights Amendment had this expiration, and Madison's Bill of Rights, if you didn't know, he submitted 12 amendments, and they didn't have an expiration. And one of those amendments was just recently passed, I think it was 1992, that had something to do with the, or maybe it was 2002. Actually, I've got it here, so let me pull it up, and I can tell you when it was passed. Yes, it was 1992. It delays the laws affecting congressional salary from taking effect until after the election of the representatives. And so if somebody gets seated because an honorary position, let's say somebody quits and somebody else gets seated or what have you, they can't take a bump in pay until after they've been elected. And this is an old, old amendment that was actually submitted by James Madison. And there was a lot of contention over that, because that was called, I think that was called the Hillary Amendment. But nevertheless, the important part of this is that there was no expiration, but on this ERA amendment, it expired in, and I've got it right here. I think I even just said this. I did. It was 1982. And so that means it can't be ratified if it's expired. Somebody has to actually go through the entire process all over again, get 2/3 of Congress to, you know, pass and agree upon an amendment for the Constitution. Then it has to go back out to the states for re-ratification, because this one is dead, it's expired. Now, what they're trying to do is say, oh, well, these other ones didn't expire, and they made a mistake, and we're going to go ahead and keep this alive. No, I'm sorry. This one was written with an expert. So the reason why there are two different ways of doing this is you can kind of leave it as a lingering thing, and they go, we think people will come along eventually. And like this 1992, it literally went from, let me go into it. It was, I want to say 89. Yeah, 1789 was when it was submitted as a part of the Bill of Rights. And so, I mean, it went over 200 years to, you know, get to this point. And so they finally ratified it. It was 203 years when it finally got ratified, because they didn't expire. They were left open. And the reason why somebody wants to put an expiration is to create an expediency, an urgency. We got to hurry up and get this passed. And so it forces grassroots movements and money and all sorts of things to go into this. And, you know, the key thing is money and being able to elevate oneself or what have you. But if your idea is good, then great. Well, anyway, I would just say that if you want to send another shot across the bow, then I believe there's plenty of states that could actually do just what Illinois did, because Illinois kind of rejected it. Now they want to ratify it. I would say there's a few states that have ratified it back in, you know, 72 to 75, actually to 77. And I think some of these states would actually really consider, hey, you know what, maybe we do want to rescind our ratification. Idaho, Kansas, Nebraska, Texas, Tennessee, Alaska, Kentucky. And see, it's not about the focus behind this. It's not about people wanting to, and I'm going to get into the details of this. It's really not about trying to hurt or hold women down or any type of gender. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with the role of the federal government and whether the federal government should be doing this. And I will get into that, but I see that I'm almost out of time, so let me keep going down this list. So Tennessee, Alaska, Kentucky, Wyoming, South Dakota, Montana. I think some of these states would probably have the epiphany of going, are you kidding me? We actually ratified that? Who was stupid enough to do that? And I don't think people really understood what this does, what this amendment, because this amendment doesn't really bring equality. What it does is it gets the federal government into the knickers. If the states want to make sure that they have an equal right protection, because the federal government has no jurisdiction over genders, they have no jurisdiction over labor, no jurisdiction over a lot of things, and they're not supposed to. And so Ohio, North Dakota, and Indiana are, I think, plenty of states that might actually consider going, you know what, we think we ought to rescind our ratification of this and make them pack up a new one and give us something better this time. But I would just send the message, we're not even interested in giving you any more power, federal government. We're talking about taking it away. Anyway, I'm at a hard break, and I'll be back talking about this ERA. And if you want to talk about it, because I'm going to get into the details as soon as we get back. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So I don't want anybody accusing me that I'm a woman hater, or I want to put jackbooted thugs on my mother or wife, daughters, any women in my life, or any woman, period. That is not the case here. The whole case here is whether, first off, the federal government should be dictating quotas and mandates and so forth over things like this. They have no jurisdiction in anything domestic. And as a matter of fact, let me just set the tone, because when the framers wrote the Constitution, they wrote these things called the Federalist Papers, and they actually kind of explained the intent of the federal government several different ways and times. One such way was in Federalist Paper number 45 by James Madison. And I want you to hear this, because this is really important to understand why the federal government should have no business regulating anything in the domestic nature, whether that be gender, civil rights, those types of things like the Civil Rights Act. This needs to be done at the state level. The restrictions that we put on the federal government should be keeping them out of our lives. And so this is what Madison said. The powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government. So in other words, the powers that the Constitution is giving the federal government are few and defined. He goes on and says, those which are to remain in the state governments are numerous and indefinite. The former, the federal government, will be exercised principally on external objects as war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce, with which the last power of taxation will, for the most part, be connected. The powers reserved to the state will extend to all the objects which in the ordinary course of affairs concern the lives, liberties, and properties of the people and in the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the states. The states are supposed to be managing this. The states are supposed to be basically dictating and ensuring that their people, their citizens, are all being fairly and equally treated. Now, I actually have a little bit of experience in this, having gone through both business school, and we've gone through these cases of diversity and all of that. And one of the things that's come out in these studies is that we have a societal problem. We don't have a gender problem. And as a matter of fact, as a manager and as a leader in the Marine Corps and in business management, I have recognized that it has been more of a societal norm holding women down, it's been more of the societal norm or the accepted societal norm of the individuals than it is anything else. And so this kind of an amendment would actually put the nose of the camel into the tent of getting the federal government even further into the family. But let me get into this, these studies and so forth before I get into the camel's nose. The whole point of these studies was to determine whether women were really being held down by leadership and management. And I can tell you, as women being underneath me, many a times I tried to promote them. I tried to help them get promoted, giving them more opportunities. I went out of my way because they deserved it, not because of any quotas or anything else. I had a very strong team and a team of leaders, and as far as I was concerned, they deserved every promotion, and I was pretty liberal with that because they worked hard and they deserved that. However, every time I tried to get the women on my team to be promoted, they were in a situation where husband and wife made the determination that the wife was going to be the one to ensure, or maybe it was a single mom. They were the ones that were making the conscious decision to put their career not on hold, but, you know, if opportunities of advancement came that would compromise, they would say, well, no, I don't want to do that. And so many a times it was every time there was always some case like that where they didn't want to take on the responsibilities, having to work hard or work longer, travel more or what have you in taking a leadership position. And there was some very similar in these studies when I was going through business school, that it wasn't necessarily that businesses were putting their heels on the throats of women. It was actually a societal choice because how the families work. And so my question is the ERA is this Equal Rights Amendment more designed to strip away or attack the family further? And if you look at Phyllis Schlafly's arguments back in the 70s, absolutely it was. She understood that this was going to take away those types of decisions. In other words, it was going to create a complete transparency between the roles in a family, that if women wanted to be out, it was going to force families to have to. And there was many women that realized that maybe this isn't going to be a good thing, because I actually like being a mom. I like being a parent, and I like having a job now that I can do that, and it helps the family or what have you. But I don't want to be forced into something and forcing businesses into something. The whole point is that we have a societal norm, and what they're trying to do is they're trying to push a law down our throats for the federal government to rip apart families or to inject itself into the family. And as I read in the Federalist Papers, they have no business doing that, and that's not their job. And the fact that they're trying to get this in, and the fact that they've tried to do these things in so many different ways, and they're violating the Constitution in so many different ways, it just shows to me that what we have is no longer any resemblance of the government that the framers created. What we have is a communist government that wants to grow itself into autonomy from the Constitution so that it can discard it, take away our rights and privileges, and dictate to us what it believes is best, because obviously we're too stupid to know what's right. Because that is the paradigm of a progressive. We need to be told what we need to do because we just don't know good enough for ourselves what's best. And so, but the funny thing is, you talk to a progressive and you tell them what's best for them, they'll get equally offended. They go, you have no business telling me what to do. You have no business doing that. It's the same thing, you know. You've probably seen the analogies of socialism when everybody gets equal pay and so forth. You know, kids think that this is a great idea, and then the teacher implements some socialism. Well, everybody's going to get a C. You know, the kids that get A's and B's are going to be really upset, and the kids that get D's and F's go, yay, yeah, that's good, because we're going to socialize grades now. It doesn't matter how hard you work. And kids recognize how wrong that is. People should be able to flourish based on their own efforts and on their own merits, instead of everybody being held to the same. And that is an insidious nature of communism, socialism, statism. And so that's why this is so important, that those other states actually look at rescinding their ratifications and actually stepping up and saying, this isn't your job, federal government. We're going to do this and stay out of our business. We're going to make sure that if women want an equal shot, an equal opportunity, they're not getting it, then we will step in and make sure that nothing nefarious or bad is happening, and let the states do this, because literally this is a state's responsibility. That's what state governments, counties, that's even churches, the communities, and so forth. This is where the domestic focus should be, is in all the entities and organizations from the state down, not at the federal government dictating policies. And I could just imagine the Department of Genders that they would try to create. And so next thing you know, there's going to be the transgender department. And it's going to be crazy. The federal government has no business doing this. And that's why we need to do republic review. That's why we need to audit the Constitution. Tell the federal government clearly they're violating the Constitution in exercising all of these powers. Nobody can argue this. Nobody can argue this. I go through this with professors. They cannot refute my argument. Period. The Constitution's a contract. It's an airtight, locked-down contract. The only, capital O, capital N, capital L, capital Y, the only process that the federal government can exercise any power that is not delegated is if it goes through the Article 5 process and the states formally delegate that power to the federal government. It's literally that easy, folks. This is not rocket science. They wrote this Constitution so that the layman and a dummy like me can get it. And I'm hoping you're getting this as well. I'm at a hard break. I'll be right back after word from our sponsor and promos. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Last call for phone calls. Anyway, I know that a lot of people, because I talk to people that listen to the show, and they go, you know, I'm just afraid of sounding like an idiot. And how many people have gone through school and have heard those teachers say over and over again, there's no such thing as a stupid question. Really, there isn't. I mean, if you don't understand it, then it is more important that you do. And it's more important that you understand the message. If you don't understand what I'm saying, then I'll try to rephrase it. I'll actually pull it up out of the Constitution or what have you and give you the, you know, the actual words, try to translate. I will do what I can because I'm here at your service. Believe me. If you haven't heard, I'm not asking, I do ask for money, but that's in my promos. But I tell people, if you've got money to send me, hold on to it. I need that money to go to those who are going to be committing to the Constitution, and we want to get them over the line in the primaries and elected into these offices. I believe that they're the ones that need to get the financial support at this point. If that doesn't tell you that this isn't about GR, this is all about saving the Constitution. So with that, I think I mentioned and I've talked about the camel's nose.
If you haven't heard the old story, the metaphor, what do you want to call it? I forget. There's a word that starts with an A that basically is a story, but it's a story. And it's a fable, what have you, that there's the tent owner or the camel's owner was inside the tent and the camel was outside in a bad windstorm, and the camel pleaded to the owner, "Let me get my face into the tent. The sand is just ripping my nose. It's just hard to breathe." So the tent, the camel owner, said, "Okay, I feel sorry for you. I'll let your nose in." And then he says, "Oh, but it's ripping at my eyes too. Just let me get my head in just a little bit further." And okay, to the eyes. And neck, slowly but surely that camel worked his whole body into the tent and pushed the camel owner out into the windstorm or the sandstorm. And so that's what happens when you start letting government start creeping into our lives. We don't need it. We don't want it. You really do not want government to start making the changes that you think are best, because down the road, around the corner, and this history proves this, most people thought that a lot of things that Hitler was doing was good. And I'm not trying to just jump into the Hitler analogy. It could have been Stalin. It could have been Napoleon. It could have been any despot. Whenever they have the ultimate sovereignty, when you give them and you surrender those types of controls to them, then all of a sudden they start taking these noble approaches. "We're going to do this, and we're going to help you with this." And people go, "Oh, this is great." Then all of a sudden they start taking your rights. They start taking your privileges, because they go, "You know what? We're kind of running out of these things, so we're going to have to take them from you." And nothing holds them back, because they have, you've surrendered your sovereignty, and the only way to get that back is via a revolution. We do not have equality anymore. I tell preppers this, I tell all these people that if you think you're going to be able to fight the technology level and the weaponry and the sophistication that the government can rain down upon you, then you're a fool. Because, you might be able to hide and defend yourself, but there's just no way you're going to be able to attack and take this country back. We're not going to be able to do a George Washington American Revolution Part 2. I apologize, but there's just no way of doing that. Now, I wanted to get into a couple of more points, and actually, I really apologize, because I was looking to get into the Massachusetts. I told you I was going to get into some of these other ratification debates and kind of give you some comparisons, and you'll find that the Massachusetts ratification debates are pretty interesting, unlike the New York ratification debates. As a matter of fact, I went through the New York, I'll save that, because I know I'm going down another rat hole. If you haven't heard, and I thought this was kind of interesting, Vermont is literally paying people $10,000 or more to move there to work remotely. In other words, they don't want you to come in for business purposes, but they want you to come so that you can work remotely. And I would look at their tax structure, because this reeks of a typical government ploy of how they can up their revenues. Yeah, they may pay you $10,000 or more, but they know the people that are working remotely are making a certain amount of money, and they're probably going to get that money back in 4 to 5 years with their income tax. Oh, yeah. Anyway, here's an interesting thing, and I've thrown this out here, and I actually used to have a question on religious freedom here in America. Does the Constitution literally guarantee religious freedom? Denmark is banning burqas. I mean, they're finally waking up to this this progressive multiculturalism that they're trying to destroy Europe with, and that's what they're literally trying to do. And so I find it interesting that Denmark is going down this path of banning burqas. And most people, well, that can't happen here. Actually, no, it can, and it can again, and there's nothing in the Constitution that stops this. And I want you to understand that the Bill of Rights is a negative on the federal government. The 14th Amendment creates a negative against the states on individual privileges and immunities, not state privileges and rights. States actually used to be able to have state-sponsored religions. States used to actually have many religions banned.
They did not allow the Jews, the Buddhists, the Islamists, and so forth to openly practice. And so states could actually go back and do that again. There's nothing that keeps them from that, other than the ACLU would try to sue them, and it would just be dismissed because they just... It has no merit. I mean, there is literally no merit. The states have been able to, and always been able to have and dictate institutional religion. They cannot deny a person their individual religious expression. That is your privilege and immunity, that the states cannot deny individual expression. But for a organized religion to set up a mosque, a temple, a what have you, and have an organized a proselyting and those types of things, nope, they can ban that and they can shut that down. And so I just thought it was interesting that they're doing this, because what is Denmark out of the EU? Because the EU is an economic union, and they don't have a centralized, even though they're trying to get there, but they're actually bucking back, and they're saying, we're our own independent sovereign state, and we're going to ban this. And I think there's some other states, I think Hungary, I believe it was Hungary, or maybe Poland, that basically said, that came right out and said, we are a Christian nation. How about that? And so as the Islamists come in and they're trying to take over, they said, no. They actually drew the line in the sand. They called themselves a Christian nation. So it's important to start understanding what the limitations are of the Constitution. And that's what I want to give you. But more importantly, I do want to pepper you back and forth between the importance of auditing this Constitution and the constitutionality of this concept. Because the Constitution is a contract. If you believe it is anything other, then I ask you to go read Article 7 of the Constitution. And the first thing it says is that this Constitution will be ratified. And as a matter of fact, I'm not even going to guess at it. I'm going to read it because it's just literally one sentence, right? And so why not read it to you? The ratification of the conventions of 9 states. So what is ratification? It is the formal acceptance of a contract. Pretty plain and simple. So when they say that the ratification of the conventions of 9 states, so they basically, instead of putting this back to the state legislators, they said, states, you're going to have a convene a convention to debate this, and you will vote on whether you want to keep this or ratify this, accept this contract. And if you get 9 states that accept this contract, then that shall be sufficient for the establishment of this Constitution between the states, so ratifying the same. Right there, that one little sentence identifies that this is a contract. It's a contract for and by the states and among the states. And third, the states are the supreme over the contract itself. In other words, the federal government is only supreme in the powers that the states delegate to it via the Article 5 process and what is actually been ratified in the Constitution and ratified amendments. So that's why I tell people that the Civil Rights Act is not an amendment. It is just an act, and it is only valid in the Washington, D.C., because that is the only place where the federal government has jurisdiction. Well, surprise, surprise, I ran out of time. I hope you will consider growing the show as it's continuing to grow. Tell other people. I'll be back tomorrow. I am G.R. Mobley. I'm reclaiming the Republic with your help. Thank you so much. I'll be back tomorrow. And so just forgot to tell you that was for the terrestrial broadcasting, because we actually have airwaves that are broadcasting this at 300 broadcasters. And most of the people that I know, they have to stream this. And so tomorrow I will be getting into those, what do you call the Massachusetts ratification, doing a contrast with Massachusetts and the Virginia ratification debates. You'll find that the real pearl of the ratification debates are the Virginia, just due to the fact that the brain power that just resided in that debate. And the interesting thing is, the guy that was
responsible for all sorts of insidious, unconstitutional government, John Marshall, happened to be sitting in that Virginia ratification debate. And so I actually am out of time now. I am G.R. Mobley, and I will be back tomorrow, like I said, with these ratifications, unless something other than that in the Constitution comes up, and we'll go there.